Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. I'm your host Matthew Karagic and it's a pleasure to have your company as we discuss all of the action from match day 19. If there's one thing that you know about the Zweite Bundesliga, it is to expect the unexpected, and match day 19 threw all of that into the mix. We saw some cracking games of football. One we'll definitely talk about in group one came from Sunday afternoon. Upsets? Well, I had a few. Three of the five teams in the bottom five managed to win on match day 19, meaning the relegation battle is well and truly on. And a new contender emerging from the ashes to throw their hat into the ring as a promotion candidate. We've got all that and much more coming on this week's edition. We start at the Merkurspiel Arena. It is Fortuna Düsseldorf against St. Pauli. This was the top Spiel game. This was also the second Fortuna for Aal game, which essentially means that fans were able to attend the game for free, and they turned up in their droves. 52,000 made their way for a fantastic Saturday evening's entertainment. Well, the show was really much commanded, especially in the first half, by number 10 for St. Pauli, Marcel Hartl. The penalty was given on 16 minutes after Vince Vermey elbowed the ball off a free kick from Eric Smith. And I tell you what, it's a really good decision from referee Frank Vilenborg, who, you know, has his moments from time to time. Penalty given Marcel Hartl, cool as you'd expect. Hartl gets the second goal just 10 minutes late. It's his 11th of the season. He's St. Pauli's top scorer by quite a bit. And as Adam Kahn, who's obviously been a guest on the podcast, pointed out of contract at the end of the season. Sign him up. Do anything. They're in such a really good position at the moment, and it would make sense to put pen to paper if they can. Düsseldorf were better after the goal. They had their chances through Tanaka. Solis was really good in this game, and it would be Solis that would get the goal. And what a goal it was. Really good counter-attack from Düsseldorf. St. Pauli playing a really high line, even though Fabian Hützler wasn't on the bench. Co-trainer Peter Nemeth was very much in charge, and they implemented the same systems that you'd expect. They get caught out, and Solis, well, he took a body. It was as if Hauke Vaal had slipped on a banana peel. What should you do, like in Mario Kart? He falls over, and Solis with a cool finish to beat Nikola Vasil. And it really set the stage for a very tense final 10 minutes of the game, which Düsseldorf came with great vigour and excitement, but unfortunately they couldn't find the secondary goal. And ultimately that means a defeat for them. Only 1 point in their opening two games to start 2024 for Fortuna. It means they drop all the way down to fifth in the standings. Sorry, they stay fifth in the standings, but a missed opportunity for them ultimately, given the results that happened on Sunday. They could very much still be in the mix, but they were largely disappointing, especially in the opening phase. They really let St. Pauli dictate. And we've spoken about it throughout the season, and it was very clear in the opening 25 minutes. Press at your peril. Fortuna were really engaged in pressing quite intensely against St. Pauli, but St. Pauli, such a strong passing team, able to go straight through it with relative ease, and their 83% pass completion percentage suggests that they had really no issues. They had the better chances for it throughout the game. If you look at the shot map from Footmob, you know, 9 of the 14 shots on goal managed to managed to be from inside the 18-yard box, and that's really hard to win games when you're giving up such high-quality goal-scoring opportunities, which Fortuna did in this instance. And when you let Marcel Hartl create and be the guy, you're just making it really hard for yourself, and ultimately defeat cometh their way. it's kind of a difficult one for Fortuna. They just, their phases of dominance were too infrequent. They had a good patch after, you know, coming out of the break, but then St. Pauli just got on top again, really controlled the tempo of the play, really forced Fortuna to have to be a bit creative. You know, they made some substitutions which sort of worked in a way, but they didn't. I thought they might have waited a bit too long to bring on Klaus and Daferna and Yastrzemski, and I saw that he had Yastrzemski basically playing as a left back in that moment. But yeah, it just sort of waited a little bit too long to try and make something happen, and St. Pauli just too competent in the end. I suppose if we're looking at like some things to look at for St. Pauli as well, Nikolai Vasil very good in this game. Alyoshi Kaimlin, also very good. He's actually been quite impressive in the two games he's played. And with Australia making it to the quarterfinals of the Asian Cup, pretty handy guy to have in the midfield. We talked about him last week. Very good. Was Kaimlin and fantastic. Really, really diligent signing from St. Pauli during this winter window. And yeah, I guess the only thing that they probably want is they want to see their top three getting the goals. You know, Saad had a trying day. Eggestein was, and Athlone were solid, but ultimately didn't have the final product in the end. But good result. Really, really good play from St. Pauli. And you look at what's coming up for them. Greuther Fürth, which suddenly becomes a massive game and a really exciting game to watch. I actually think that's going to be a cracking game to view and be part of, given what's happened. That is a world feed game, thankfully. So that will be a fantastic watch, given what's... we'll talk about Greuther Fürth at the end of Group 1. But, and then you've got Magdeburg and Braunschweig. And, you know, Magdeburg a bit up and down. Braunschweig, at the moment, four games in a row on the winning side. So that suddenly becomes a bit difficult. Dusseldorf, they play Paderborn, who are a bit up and down. Elversberg, and then Karlsruhe, who we're going to talk about in a sec. So the funny thing about this, all of this, though, is that these two sides are going to go at it again because the DFB Pokal is back this week. And they're going to do battle once again at the Milan Tour. That game is tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow. Tomorrow night. German time, 7:45 kickoff, local time. One of the two games that are on tonight. So it should actually be should be cracking DFB Pokal. And what a good game to lead it off with. But, good result. Maybe Dusseldorf can enact some revenge in the cup. But in league form, it's looking very, very good for St. Pauli, who now have a 4-point advantage over the chasing pack. Let's talk about their neighbours, inner city neighbours, Hamburg. They welcomed Karlsruhe to the Volkspark Stadion on Sunday afternoon. A massive game. Hamburg, of course, coming off that win against Schalke, where they were really good in the opening phases, and then they were holding on. It would be fair to say Karlsruhe, on the other hand, also coming off a victory on match day 18, hoping to make it 2. Well, they could not have got off to a better start, Karlsruhe, when they scored twice in the opening 6 minutes. And it was a wash, rinse, repeat formula. Sebastian Jung absolutely cooking down the right-hand side, whipping a ball into the box, and Igor Matanovic, former St. Pauli striker, was on hand. The first one, bit unlucky maybe for Daniel Hoyer Fernandez, in the sense that he's in such a great position but doesn't get enough of his body on it, and it squeezes into the back of the net. The second one, he gets rounded. I mean, he's doing the right thing. If you're going to make a play, you've got to really commit. He committed, potentially overcommitted, and Matanovic just walked around him and put the ball in the back of the net. And Karlsruhe's opening 20 minutes was fantastic. They were all over Hamburg. Not only would you use sort of football superlatives like they were up for it, and you know, there was a real desire to get forward. They were brilliant. And they were a bit unlucky not to make it 3 or 4 in the opening 20. You know, Zuzovace had his opportunity to do so, but he missed wide. And Hoyer Fernandez, who admittedly didn't have a great game, was under siege, I think, in front of him. the back four in general was really poor for Hamburg. But 2-0 early on. But Hamburg did respond. They scored two goals in as many minutes themselves. Bakary Yata, who was one of Hamburg's shining lights in this game, he gets the goal on 33 minutes. And then Laszlo Benes with an absolute beauty from outside the box. He's got 10 goals this season. He's now the second Hamburg player this campaign to enter the double digits at four goals scored. And really, they dominated all the way to halftime. And you felt that, okay, Hamburg have really turned the screws here. They're probably going to run away with the game here if they can get the third goal. Unfortunately, they did undid all of their hard work within seconds of the second half beginning. Turnover in their own defensive third. It's not really much football because it was just more or less getting the ball forward. And it falls to Zizhevatse, who's absolutely draped by Ambrosius. And he, again, another shot that cannons off Hoyer Fernandez and into the back of the net. His sixth goal of the campaign for the Georgian international. And I'm disappointed he didn't have enough of a flex celebration. It was some really good body control. He was strong to fend off Ambrosius, who was very much wearing him like a cheap suit. But yeah, 3-2, things are looking good. But Hamburg, again, they really kicked themselves into gear to get the equaliser. It's Yata assisting Robert Glatzel. Glatzel gets goal number 13. He is relatively, well, I wouldn't say comfortably, but he's two goals ahead of the next best, which is Marcel Hartl for the Toyota Canon. So 3-3, you're thinking, okay, Hamburg surely will run away with this again. But then you have to realise that Karlsruhe have this guy called Marvin Vanitzek who just doesn't know when to lose. And it's a turnover again in the defensive half for Hamburg. Van der Bremp gets picked off by Vanitzek. A couple of touches. It seems like the angle was a bit much for Karlsruhe's number 10. But beautiful finish across the body of Hoyer Fernandez to make it 4-3. And that is your final. For Karlsruhe, big implications for them, given everything that's happened over the course of match day 19. They are now into the top half of the table in eighth position. They've won three consecutive games, unbeaten in their last five, and the turnaround has been immense for them. Let's not beat around the bush, though. Defensively, they are still fragile. I think this game showcased some of the defensive weaknesses that they have shown throughout the season. They when teams overwhelm them, they really buckle under the pressure for the most part. They also got a really good game from Patrick Dreves, who really held it together when that siege was coming, because he's had an up and down season, admittedly, for his goalkeeping performance throughout. But he really stood up when needed. You know, he was a bit unlucky with the Benes goal. That was just a great bit of individual quality. The Glatzel goal was just, yeah, you know, Karlsruhe getting opened up. But he made some big saves throughout this game to keep Karlsruhe in it. And they took advantage. And a fantastic result for them. And now they're 7 points above the drop zone, which has gotten a lot more interesting. We'll talk about a lot of that stuff in groups 2 and 3. But good result. Good result for Karlsruhe. And their next three, VfB Wiesbaden at home, Eintracht Braunschweig away, and then Fortuna Düsseldorf at home. You know, three tricky fixtures. We know how great Wiesbaden are defensively. We'll talk about them in group 2. Braunschweig getting results. Düsseldorf, we know on their day, can beat anyone in this league. And some good results for Karlsruhe. For Hamburg, though, really the causes of their own downfall here. They just made way too many mistakes in their defensive half. I thought their opening 20 minutes defensively was just all over the place. It was way too easy. They got opened up far too often. But credit to Karlsruhe in the sense that they were able to really get their fullbacks forward into dangerous areas where they can put a ball into the box. Just mind-blowing how bad Hamburg were in the man-to-man marking in open play. And really, they should have been 3-4-0 down in the opening 20. They were just not good enough, not up to the task, and they just didn't have enough going for them. You know, Yata was really good in this game. He seems to play quite well against Karlsruhe. He was really good in the early fixture on match day two, but just not enough guys helping out the cause really. And I was kind of surprised that Tim Boulder waited on bringing on Emmanuel Frey. You know, it felt, you know, when they got to 3-3, it would have been, for mine anyway, a really good opportunity to pop him in, put him in the game, to have his interaction and his play, and he's played really well. But look, it was a fantastic game, and again, you know, I think those who were fortunate enough to go really treated to a great game, and obviously a lot of unhappy Hamburg fans at the end with some pretty loud boos and whistles. We'll see what happens there. If you live in America or you are subject to the world feed and you're a Hamburg fan, you'll love this because the next month is littered with Hamburg fixtures. Their games against Hertha, Hanover, Hansa Rostock and Elversberg will all be world feed games. So if you're ESPN Plus, BN Sport Connect here in Australia or Sky, you'll be able to enjoy a full February of Hamburg fixtures. So that game against Hertha becomes very interesting given the situation. Hanover starting to get a result. We talk about them later on. And then Hansa, it's a bit of a danger game for Hamburg because we know that they tend to play a bit below themselves against teams that are very much in the fight for the drop. So that'll be really fascinating fixture, but ultimately really disappointing from Hamburg in the end. And for mine anyway, they didn't deserve to win this game. So good result for them. And lastly, let's head to the Sport Park. Ronhoff Thomas Sommer scored a third against Holstein Kiel. Fantastic game this one as well. On Sunday, it was the De Kleber in the end, taking the 3 points, 2-1. Armindo Zeeb with a sensational goal. It's another goal. It's his fifth goal of the campaign. He was very industrious in this game, but they only held the lead for about 5 minutes. Patrick Erosch got an equaliser on 64 minutes. And, you know, Kiel were really good after the goal they scored. They had a little, some passage of dominance, but it was all for naught because Branimir Hogota on 75 minutes got his seventh goal of the campaign. But potentially a little bit lucky that it squeezed its way through to the back of the net. But ultimately, they all count the same. So a big win for Alexander Zorniger's side. What does that mean in terms of the table? Because we've talked about in this section, you know, you've got the top five in here and then Karlsruhe, who are eighth. Fürth are now second. They leapfrog Kiel and Hamburg into second. And remarkable turnaround from Alexander Zorniger to get Fürth very much humming. If you look at the teams form-wise in the top five, they've accumulated the most points, 11 points out of a possible 15 in their last five fixtures. And if you compare that to everyone else in the league, only Eintracht Braunschweig has accumulated more points than Fürth and Karlsruhe in that period. So it tells you everything you need to know. And what a good result it is for them. It puts them only 4 points behind St. Pauli and only goal difference ahead of Kiel. I think Fürth's first half was fantastic, and Hergerter was the man. He really dictated the way that Fürth wanted to play on the ball. Had a really cracking effort on goal. That was well saved by Timon Werner. And Werner himself, admittedly, was very strong in this game, and a good reason why Kiel were in the hunt in the first half, because they also had other chances. Hogurda set up Julian Green at the back post, and again, another good save from Viner. And, you know, one of the problems that Kiel have had over the course of the last few years is having consistent goalkeeping. They've had a real string of different players between the pipes, whether it's Joanna Gelios, Robin Himmelman. There's been a real mix of guys who have been there, not always been consistently good, or they got it a run. And Viner is sort of similar. Like his form this season has been pretty solid. But yeah, we filthy about the goal. The second goal he conceded, it was the near post. It was a volley from distance, low near post as well. But yeah, look, I thought Fürth's first half, though, if it wasn't for Viner, could have easily got 2-0 up. A lot of yellow cards in this game from referee Alexander Tsatha, who was very happy to dish some yellow cards in the first half. I know that two of them were for dissent for Fürth with Ubig and Zorniger. Rorter and Remberg also got yellows in the first half. So he was happy to dish the yellows out like Oprah dishing out cars at her show. But look, Fürth, fantastic. And we spoke about it before. St. Pauli, World Feed, big game at the Milan Tour. Saturday afternoon footy. It doesn't get much better than that, to be honest. And I think with the way Fürth are playing defensively as well, they're much improved. They get Usama Haddadi back from AFCON after Tunisia got skittled. Having him back in the squad, because they've had sort of an unsure identity of who to play at left wing back, whether it be Kerem Çalhanoğlu. They had Lucas Petkov playing as a makeshift left wing back, which to an extent worked, but not optimal. So getting him back is a good win for them. But yeah, that St. Pauli game, then they've got Hertha, and then they travel to Hanover, which is also a World Feed game on Friday the 16th of February. For Kiel, it's a tricky one because they had their moments in the first half where they should have scored. And the one that sticks out for me is the Mochino one-on-one. Cracking football from Kiel to really break down Fürth, who were playing quite a high line. And he's just got to score. Simple as that. And kind of sums up where he's at the moment. It feels like he's lost a little bit of confidence. Just not playing with the same sort of swagger that he was when he started at the start of the campaign. And yeah, just a loss of confidence. You know, they had Fred Johnson up front with him. And you know, you feel like they're missing Benedict Pickler quite a bit. It's just not ticking the same way it was. When they had Pickler, they had Arp, Skripski as well, they're missing. So it's pretty makeshift up at the top. And you can see they just don't have the same dynamism in the forward half to really make an impression. So I wonder what Kiel might do. I know they've been really busy in the transfer window, bringing in a couple of players to help in the attacking forefront, which is necessary for them if they're going to really make a challenge at promotion. You know, Alexander Bernhardsson, who they got from Elfsborg, which I thought, from all accounts, very solid attacking player, plays with a lot of width. That's a loan deal until the end of the season, and they're going to need him. They brought back Mikhail Kukuskov as well, a left wing back option. So, you know, interesting move. Sorry, but Hansen was not a loan deal, it was a buy. But no need to panic yet. Obviously disappointed, but they've got a lot of injuries in key areas, especially in the attacking end. They still miss Philip Zander, they've shown that they can. They were really up for it in the second half when they got the equaliser. They hit the post twice, but you know, we'll see. They've got Magdeburg away, and then they've got Schalke at home, which is a World Feed game, and then Paderborn later on in the month. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our Group 2 games, starting with the big one on Friday night, Kaiserslautern and Schalke. A massive fixture at the Betze on Friday night, Kaiserslautern against Schalke. Two giants of German football going head-to-head, trying to avoid the relegation battle? Why, yes. Both teams have been in horror form. Well, mainly Kaiserslautern. Winless since match day 9, they welcomed the Schalke side, who were disappointing in their home opener against Hamburg in 2024. They were hopeful that with the return of Darko Chilinov, good vibes and improved footballing on the attacking end would help cover up the cracks of what has been a dismal defensive performance throughout the campaign. They, of course, got off to a horror start. The returning Ragnar Ake was back in the starting lineup, and as you would expect, he found solace with an early goal just 10 minutes in. Just a strange game. First half-wise, Kaiserslautern very, very good. Schalke, the defensive frailty is very noticeable. But they did get a goal, Schalke, just moments into the second half. Karaman with a sensational ball to Chulinov. Chulinov does so, so well, and then puts the ball into the back of the net. And the vibes, the goodness, and everything you love about Chulinov and his passion for wanting to come back to Schalke, very much appeasing the travelling fans. And they brought a mass of them along as part of the just under 50,000 that made the journey on Friday night. Unfortunately, there was a period of absolute hell for Schalke. And in the space of just over 10 minutes, it went from 1-1 to 4-1. And you could see it, because you know how poor Schalke have been defensively. And when you concede goals the way that they did, especially the first two of the of that flurry from Kaiserslautern, you know where the problems lie. Header, Ragnar Ake. Header, Filip Stojilković, who was once upon a time Darmstadt's record signing just last year. But he's trying to rebuild his career, and scoring off the bench, replacing Ake in the process, was a good way to do so. And then 3 minutes after that, Aaron Opoku made it 4-1, and that was your game. It means that Kaiserslautern win for the first time since match day 9 when they defeated Hanover. Schalke dropped down to 15th. And with results having panned out the way they have, they are now equal on points with Hansa Rostock and Eintracht Braunschweig, who sit in 17th and 16th respectively. Let's talk about Kaiserslautern first. Let's get the good stuff out of the way. Big win for Dimitrios Gramotsis in beating his former employers. That's a massive psychological victory for him. But also to finally break what has been a long drought without victory for De Rota Tufel. But as we've talked about on this podcast for a lot this season, this team functions so much better with Ragnar Ake, and I've been crunching the numbers. So just bear with me on this. Ragnar Ake has played, 13 games this season. From the 21 points that they have accumulated this season, in games where Ake has featured, 6 wins, 2 draws, 5 defeats. 20 points. In games where Ake hasn't featured, a single point, a draw and 5 losses. But the numbers really showcase his value when he scores. When Ake finds the back of the net, he scored 8 times this season. 5 wins, a draw and a defeat. That defeat came match day 1 against St. Pauli. He was a substitute in that game. 16 points out of the 21 total. It is so clear and obvious the impact that the million-dollar man Ragnar Ake has had on this team. And the glaring over-reliance of needing him to function in all phases. Especially in the final third. Because you could see the games where he was not there, they really struggled. They really struggled to make any sort of headway. So, protect him all you can, I suppose, would be the sort of the message there. But it was such a... There was something romantic about the bets are just... The Fritz Walter shot it absolutely just rocking. It was one of those magical nights against a giant, say, another giant team of German football. And every goal just seemed to have a bit more to it for Kaiserslautern. It was almost as if it was a cup final. Some sort of knockout match. A game of real significance, which it was in the context of both teams' seasons. So, I suppose the only thing that you can really sort of knock Kaiserslautern for is they still gave up chances, but less quality chances than they scored themselves. Can they continue this form? That's the big question going forward. Elversberg away, Paderborn, and then Nuremberg. The next 3 tricky fixtures. Elversberg are in a bit of a free fall at the moment, but can stump teams on their day. Paderborn are a bit up and down. Nuremberg also up and down. I've got to translate this into momentum. Yes, they've got cup game coming up against Hertha in midweek, at the Olympiastadion, and what a momentous occasion it would be for them if they could make it to the semi-finals. But we'll have to wait and see on that, if they can. Now to Schalke. Defensively, it has just been embarrassing. And it is clear that they're not going to make any more reinforcements with the window closing very shortly. They just can't defend. It doesn't matter who they play. You know, like I saw on social media about, oh, well, Marcin Kaminski's out, so, you know, it's probably not a bad thing. They still were bad. You know, Kallas was okay. Baumgartel looked like someone who hadn't played for a while, and truth be told, that's the case. Not good enough. Brunner wasn't great either. Neither was Mürken. They look lost. And I think also their midfield doesn't help them either. It's a failure on all fronts in the defensive end. And look, I have to talk about Ralf Firmino as well, because I love Ralf Firmino. You know, growing up watching football, when I started getting into German football, Ralf Firmino was one of my favourite goalkeepers. Always felt he should have at least had a chance in the German national team setup. His prime years in Schalke when they were in the Bundesliga, challenging for Europe. But he can't start going forward. He looks broken. Something's broken, Ralf, in the sense that just there's nothing. It's almost an empty soul portraying the 18-yard box. And it's hard to watch. A guy who for so long has bled royal blue and white. And I think for him, you know, Marius Müller's got to start the next game, and reports suggest that will be the case against Braunschweig, and that should be the case, because the games that he's played this season, he's been spectacular and rarely looked out of place, really commanded his position in the team. So that is going to be really interesting. The other thing is they need to find other outlets. Can't just be Keenan Karaman just creating. You know, a lot of their signings throughout the season have really turned into duds at the moment. And you just wonder. They've got to find other outlets. They've got to get others involved. Others have to step up to the plate. There is no sympathy for Schalke at all. Nor should there be. It's a self-made problem that they've created. And their next three games are massive. Especially given what Braunschweig is doing. Hansa winning on the weekend. They can't rely on others. It is in their hands to make the most. Braunschweig is going to be a massive game on Saturday afternoon. And if you don't show a response, you deserve to be where you are, which is the case. The worst defensive team in the league. Worse than Osnabrück. And Osnabrück had a game where they gave up 7. So, their next three massive. Braunschweig at Kiel, Wiesbaden at home. That Kiel game's a world feed game. We'll see what happens. The other Friday night game was Hanover. Hanover against Nuremberg. Nuremberg were great and efficient against Hansa Rostock. Hanover, on the other hand, well, yeah, a draw against Elversberg in a game where they went 2-1 behind and found a way. There was no such letting up for Hanover, who were brilliant in this game and had one of the highest expected goals of the match day. I think Karlsruhe had a better one, but only they were ahead. Or maybe it was Fürth. 2 goals, Harvard Nielsen in the first half. The first one, well played. The second one was the best goal that I think I've seen Hanover produce all season. Sebastian Ernst, who's barely played this season, hasn't really had a look into the team, gets the start. Wins possession on the edge of the halfway, closer to the dugout. Commentary side. Some beautiful football from Hanover, and ultimately leads into Derek Kuhn playing a ball into Harvard Nielsen for the second goal. It was so wonderful. Like, that's the football they can play. We know that, like, they've got the individual quality to do it. And it was brilliant. Like, fantastic goal. And then they really controlled the game. Nuremberg really didn't offer a whole lot. Seems like they're still figuring out what their best, what to do up front. You know, Anderson, again, getting the start, really didn't have much influence of the game. Didn't have a lot of service either. A lot of that had to do with Hanover defending quite well and sort of mixing the system up. They played more of a back four, a bit more stability. Worked really well for them. The third goal, counter-attacking goal, fantastic, brilliant. So there's a couple of things that like we got to sum up here. For me, this was their best performance of the campaign. I know they beat Osnabrück 7-0, but Osnabrück, unfortunately, are a bit off it. Nuremberg have shown glimpses of being really good. They're just very inconsistent. But for Hanover, this is massive because let's take it back 12 months. They had to wait until April 1st, and I promise you that wasn't an April Fool's joke. It took them till April 1 to win their first game of the new calendar year. And it led to a lot of criticism and a lot of, maybe Stefan Leitl isn't the right guy for us. They win on match day 19, second match day of the new year. And they look good doing it. But I don't know how consistent they can hold up the end of the bargain. I think one player who deserves a big shout out is Fabian Kunzer, who was so good in this game. Really, on both ends, was fantastic defensively and really helped get them going forward because they like to play the diamond midfield. They did so in this game, and he's relatively isolated and worked sensationally well for them. Great performance, but his best by far in a Hanover jersey. So massive. And look, their next three games are huge. I mean, Hansa Rostock at home is the classic banana skin game for Hanover. If there was a team that they were going to lose to just randomly, where they spontaneously combust a performance of just being bad, it would be against Rostock. So this is a really good test for them to showcase that they are not that Hanover, that they have turned a leaf, they have grown. They've shown signs of growth already this season that, you know, in games where they're trailing, they're not entirely out of it like they were last season. Hamburg away on a Friday night World Feed game. Yes, please. That will be a sensational game. Then they've got Fürth coming to the Heinz von Heiden Arena and the classic Leitl-Zorniger matchup, which I think is another interesting and should be a fascinating tactical battle on the 16th. Also a Friday night game, also a World Feed game. Nuremberg just simply not good enough, ultimately. I think the midfield, they were just completely overwhelmed. And Karl Klaus, who had a pretty solid game, he didn't need gloves. He needed a raft and a life jacket because Hanover had their way. 29 shots on goal for Hanover on the goal of Klaus. 11 of those shots on target, 3 ending in goals. Oh, geez. Not good. Not good at all. And it's kind of disappointing because I think this is part of the growing pains under Fiel is anytime they take a step forward, they take that step back. And it's a step and a half and two steps and they go rebuild. And look, they've got Osnabrück on the weekend, a game that they should win. They should win. But nothing is certain in the Zweite Bundesliga. Then they've got Wiesbaden away and then Fortuna Düsseldorf at home. That doesn't sound right. But yeah, so we'll see what they do. But they've got to improve. Ultimately, it should be a pride thing for them because they've had some pretty weird games this season where you sort of question. It's Kaiserslautern, my mistake. And Kaiserslautern, you know, they're very much on the board. But they've had their performances this season where you really wonder what's going on because at times they've looked really entertaining. You can see what the kind of football field wants to play. And at other times, just not up for it. Lastly, let's head to Wiesbaden. Wiesbaden welcomed Hertha BSC to the Britta Arena on Saturday afternoon. A big test for Wiesbaden. They're four defeats in a row and desperate to get back to winning ways. They were very good in the first half and they took their chances. Franko Kovacevic opened the scoring on 24 minutes, then got a second goal on 53 minutes to make it two. Jonjo Kenny got a goal back at least to make it 2-1. But then Timon Gurpil got his second goal of the campaign to make it 3-1, and that was your game. we'll talk about Hertha quickly because it was a disappointing performance from them. Their first half was not up to snuff, and you know, Wiesbaden had their way. They benefited from some pretty poor defending for the opening goal. It was you know, John Cicchetti not tracking Kovacevic. After Ernst made the saves, Kovacevic was there to pick up the pieces. Brilliant finish for him. But the lack of polish, the lack of quality, really very much materialised in this game for Hertha. It's clear they miss Fabian Riza, and he was back at training last week. They need him back desperately to get back to full fitness after his virus. He's experienced. Because, yeah, Scherhans wasn't great. They had Prevoyat come in. Was okay. The subs kind of worked for Hertha in that phase of the game. But defensively, again, you know, they've been a real mixed bag. There was talk about potentially dropping Marc-Oliver Kempf after his performance last week, where he gave away those two penalties. But he was better in this game. I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one. Nothing seemed to work for Hertha. And although they had a lot of sustained dominance in terms of ball possession and game control, they didn't control the state of the game. And once they went behind, it got really hard for them because Wiesbaden, as we know, top-tier defensive side in the division, said, come at us. Break us down if you can. And it took a stellar goal from Kenny to get their one and only goal from the game. But very rarely did you feel as if they were challenging Florian Stritzel and the Wiesbaden goal. So a big disappointment for Hertha, who've gotten off to a slow start this new year. Wiesbaden, big win for them, breaking that losing run, or winless run, I should say. Yeah, look, goals have still been pretty hard to come by for them. 22 goals this season, and only the bottom three have scored fewer. But I suppose if they can continue to defend the way they have, they're a chance. They move up to 11th place, and we'll see if they can carry that on. When they travel to Karlsruhe on Friday night, Hertha, as we mentioned, home against Hamburg on Saturday night. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games, starting at the Eintracht Stadion when Braunschweig hosted Magdeburg. Braunschweig continued their stellar form with a win last week when they welcomed Magdeburg to the Eintracht Stadion on Sunday afternoon. Magdeburg themselves picking up a win on match day 18. They all too also hoping to slowly claw away from the relegation battle. This was an interesting game in the sense that, well, Braunschweig knew what they wanted to do. They were happy to let Magdeburg have a ton of the ball. They had 69%, which was the most of the match day. And it seems, regardless of whether it's at home or away, playing on the break, counter-attacking, quick transitional play from turnover, that is the lifestyle that Daniel Schoening wants this team to run to live by. Live by it they did, but it wasn't exactly the prettiest goal they scored, but they all count the same. Magdeburg's inability to clear the ball from the box during a goal-mouth scramble proved detrimental as Ermin Bekacic got his second goal of the campaign when he eventually poked it into the back of the net. Unlike his previous goal, there is no conjecture about this one. They had their chances to make it too. Philippe Gomez, who have been really good under Schoening, had their opportunities, their one-on-one chances, but the goalkeeper, Dominic Reimann, was on hand. What Braunschweig did super well for a good chunk of the game was force Magdeburg into playing, to making low-quality decisions in the final third. From the 8 shots on goal they had in this game, 6 of them came from outside of the box, and to be fair, majority of them very harmless. One only, an effort from Attic testing the palms of Ron Torben Hoffman. In the end, it was a Braunschweig win. It's 4 wins on the bounce for Eintracht, who remain in 16th place. Goal difference separates them from safety in 15th. They're only 3 points now behind Magdeburg. Magdeburg have a positive goal difference. They're one of 2 sides in the division with a positive goal difference in the bottom half of the table. Incredible. Look, we've said it before. When we had Tim Eckstein on the program, we both felt that Braunschweig were done. Lock it in. Osnabrück, Braunschweig, it's over. And I'm happy to be wrong. That's fine. In this case, yeah. Daniel Schoening, who, let's be honest, wasn't the most inspired signing, but given the lack of quality at experienced managerial hirings available, Schoening was a punt. And a punt worth taking, it has proven. It's really changed the way this team plays in a sense of really playing to the strengths of the technically strong and pacey players on their team. And it is clear that it's working for them. But of course, it's still a long way to go and they could still go down. They could still be in the playoff. But they're putting themselves in a position to climb their way out. Can they do it? They've got Schalke away on Saturday afternoon, which is a massive game. Karlsruhe at home and then St. Pauli away. So a tough road ahead for Eintracht Braunschweig, but they've shown a resilience, they've shown a fight, a desire, and an endearing quality about the squad that in many ways makes you want to root for them. You love seeing underdog stories. I suppose a little quick story about cricket, a sport that Braunschweig as a club in their, you know, since 1895, a sport that was synonymous with Eintracht Braunschweig. The West Indies beating Australia in Test cricket was a massive underdog story. And a player, Shamar Joseph, who came from nowhere, obscurity, he was a security guard. He barely played any, you know, first-class cricket in the last 12 months ever. Like, he's just never been able to be in the mix. He took a 7-4 and led the West Indies to victory over Australia at the Gabba. Their first win in Australia since 1997. So, you know, mightily impressive for them. But Braunschweig, very much winning the hearts of many, and rightly so. For Magdeburg, yeah, look, wasn't their day. They just didn't have the solutions. They couldn't find a plan B to really beat Daniel Schoening. And a very deep sitting low block. Then El Fadli's red card really just sort of ended it for them. They just never really could get going towards the end of the game. And yeah, that game against Holstein Kiel on Friday night becomes massive. They're only 3 points above the relegation zone now. And we're starting, you know, their next three games are quite tricky. You know, they've got Kiel, then St. Pauli, and then an away trip to Berlin against Hertha. And they might have scored 6 against Hertha last time, but I'll be surprised if they can do that again. Let's talk about Hansa Rostock, because heading into the match day, it seemed very grim. Hansa were going to find a way, but they welcomed Elversberg to the Ostseestadion. Now, where these two sides played in Saarbrücken on match day 2, it was a 2-1 win to Rostock, if you remember correctly. Hansa scored twice in stoppage time to deny Elversberg a first Zweite Bundesliga victory. Well, it was deja vu all over again, wasn't it? An opening goal for Lucas Schnellbacher on 41 minutes just before the break. He was hopping his way to a 6th goal of the campaign. They were the better side in this game. The numbers say it. It passes the eye test. They were much more dangerous going forward. But it means nothing when you can't score another goal, which they didn't. Because on 69 minutes, Rostock would equalise. It was a long throw, headed on by Oliver Husing. Dennis Dressel just put his foot through it, and it squeezed past Nicholas Kristof to make it 1-1. And then the carnage began. On 88 minutes, an effort on goal by Husing hit the arm of a laid down Frederick Jäkel. I can promise you Jäkel knew nothing about what was going on after the initial duel, which brought him to the deck. And it looked like he was bringing his arms to cover his face. I'm not so sure. But regardless, it was almost a double whammy for him. Not only did he give the penalty away, but because the shot was going on target, straight red card. straight red card. It's very unlucky. It's so unlucky. But ultimately, a correct decision in the end by referee Florian Heft. Kai Puokas steps up and scores. 2-1. Game over. Mirsad Salihamidžić gets his first win as Hansa coach. Elversberg have now lost 4 of their last 5 and only sit 5 points above the relegation zone. And suddenly, they're being dragged into the relegation fight, whether they liked it or not. We've spoken about Elversberg. They were good in this game, but not good enough to win. Hansa doing enough, but yeah, there's still not a lot to like about what they've done so far. Thought they were really poor last week. They were marginally better in this one. I thought Oliver Husing was great, though. You know, he's been much maligned over the last 18 months from his time with Arminia Bielefeld, where he basically became unplayable. And, you know, fans got stuck into him as well. But, you know, he returns to Rostock. We knew that he would be someone that could help them, someone that would be of great interest for them going in the defensive end. And I thought him with Rosbach, they really, you know, they put in a shift. It was interesting. They had, it seemed quite defensive. They had Van der Werf playing as a six. But yeah, look, there's still some teething with this Rostock team. Yeah, I just don't know what their best look is. We got Sigurd Jonsson come off the bench, but yeah, they never felt like Rostock really dominated the game. They would have like a short spell of control, and then they'd give it away, and Elversberg would control it for a sustained period of time. But ultimately, doesn't matter. They scored 2-1, and that's the most important scoreboard scoreline to talk about. So it means that Rostock still stay 17th. However, they're very much in the mix now. They're very much back in play. Hanover away, Osnabrück away, then Hamburg at home are their next three. Elversberg, Kaiserslautern at home, Fortuna Düsseldorf away, then Osnabrück at home. Speaking of Osnabrück, let's talk about them. We'll probably get through this game relatively quickly. They hosted Paderborn on Saturday afternoon. This was the only goalless game of the match day. What a tragedy that was. You know, it was a difficult game to watch in the sense that opportunities were not of the highest quality, and it never looked like anyone was going to score. Never looked like Paderborn were going to get anything from this game when Kai Kleefisch got his second yellow card just 17 minutes in, and it was all hands on deck for Lukas Kwasniok's side. And look, they have to thank Pelle Bovink, who has been okay. I don't think they've had great goalkeeping throughout the season in general. But he made some big saves in this game. So did the crossbar, by the way. Because the best opportunities for Osnabrück came 12 minutes in from Dave Gnaza, who absolutely piledrived an effort off the crossbar. And Omar Diakite had the best chance in the second half, but his cross goal header ultimately was saved by Bovink to make it 0-0. It feels like it should feel like a loss for Osnabrück, because they played more than 70 minutes with the man advantage. They couldn't break down Paderborn. Just that lack of quality in the final third, once again showing its ugly head as the worst offensive team in the league. Just couldn't find a way to break them down. And yeah, given the results with Rostock and Kaiserslautern and Braunschweig winning, they're now 10 points from safety, and that seems a bit too much for this team to overcome. But you know, we know anything can happen, but it just doesn't seem likely that they can make a move. For Paderborn, they take the point. You know, the season meeting between these two sides ended up with a point, you know, sharing the points in both games. They really miss Florian Muslia, who's now at Freiburg. But yeah, I think this is sort of going to be a bit of a rebuild for them. You know, they still sit seventh, you know, 8 points from danger. Look, still in the hunt. They're only 7 points behind a playoff spot, so anything could happen in that phase. That'll do us. Thanks again for listening to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We hope you enjoyed match day 19 and prepare to enjoy match day 20. Have a fantastic week. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. And we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.